So, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita. We're in the second chapter. The contents of the Gita summarized. Prabhupada gave it that title. We're on text 18, right?
Nityasyokta sharirina. Anashino prameyasya. Tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Antavantaha. Perishable. Ime. All these. Deha. Material bodies. Nityasya. Eternal in existence. Uktaha. Are said, sharirinaha, of the embodied soul, anashinaha, never to be destroyed, aprameyasya, immeasurable. Tasmat, therefore, yudhyasva, fight, Bharata, O descendant of Bharata, we're good. Should I continue? Translation. The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. Purport. The material body is perishable by nature. It may perish immediately, or it may do so after 100 years. It is a question of time only. There is no chance of maintaining it indefinitely. But the spirit soul is so minute that it cannot even be seen by an enemy, to say nothing of being killed. As mentioned in the previous verse, it is so small that no one can have any idea how to measure its dimension. So from both viewpoints, there is no cause of lamentation, because the living entity has, as he is, cannot be killed, nor can the material body be saved for any length of time or permanently protected. The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized. Why did he say that? The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to its work, and therefore, observance of religious principles should be realized, not explained. In the Vedanta Sutras, the living entity is qualified as light because he is part and parcel of the Supreme Light. As sunlight maintains the entire universe, so the light of the soul maintains this material body. As soon as the spirit soul is out of this material body, the body begins to decompose. Therefore, it is the spirit soul which maintains this body. The body itself is unimportant. Arjuna was advised to fight and not sacrifice the cause of religion for material bodily considerations. This is the beginning of Krishna's argumentation. And we could also say that this is the beginning of the religious argumentation, or spiritual or metaphysical argumentation. And it is very important. Here distinctions being made between that which stays and that which doesn't stay. The soul is the thing that stays, and the matter is the thing that doesn't stay. Now, there's plenty of people who don't subscribe to the belief of the existence of the soul, but then they left in the ocean of impermanence. So what's wrong with that? Well, there's many problems with that. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, in this very same chapter, Krishna is saying, na sato vidyate bhavo, na abhava vidyate sataha. Ubayor drishton tvastvaneostatva darshibhi. That those who have seen the truth, they have noticed one thing. What is the thing they have noticed? That which is that which is asat has no bhava. What is asat?
Non-permanent.
Non-permanent, right. Asat means it's not permanent. And therefore has no bhava. What is bhava? Everyone's looking towards you. Existence, yeah. So that which is, it's an interesting statement. That which is impermanent has no existence. In other words, if you think it has existence, just wait. You follow? You got that? No, I don't think so. Yeah, of course. I can see your expressions. Is it the English or just spacing out? Or both? So, it is an interesting statement. What's the statement? The statement is that which is perishable has no existence. It's quite a statement. In other words, if you think it has existence, now you're checking out the other side. I'm just about to repeat the same thing, just at the time when you're looking there. So if you think that that which is temporary has existence, just wait a bit. Did you get it now? Yeah. Because if you wait a bit, you will see it will be no more. I mean, some people wrestle with this and then they come up with the idea such as that only now is real. But what is now? Now is that which is destined to become the past. So that is the nature of everything here. But whatever you think it has value, just wait a bit. And you will see that it has no value. When you look at the old pictures, like a few hundred years old pictures of people who existed some bygone times, where are they? Or their suffering, or their enjoyment? Everything just went nowhere. Whether they enjoyed or suffered, it's right now, it's of no importance whatsoever. That's why Krishna says, na sato vidyate bhava. That which passes has no value, has no existence. And na abhava vidyate sataha. And there is no non-existence for that which is permanent. In other words, that which is permanent is the only thing that exists, that it's real. Ubayor apidrishton tastvaneos tatva darshibi. Those who have seen the truth, they have noticed this. So in other words, that which is temporary, it's not worth our time. And so Krishna is telling this to Arjuna, who's being confused, seeing old friends. is being confused, is getting lost in the situation of impermanence. Like there was a political upheaval, and Arjuna lost it. Arjuna lost it. I mean, I remember, I don't know if you were there, but there's, when Harikesh came to Hungary, what's that Krishna village? Volgi, yeah. And it was 1996, I think the year was. It was just after the war in Yugoslavia, Croatia, and devotees played tournament, soccer tournament. And so devotees divided into three teams, you know, Slovenian team, Croatian team, and the Serbian team. And in the finals, Croatian devotees played against the Serbian devotees. And I was thinking, it was right after the war. I don't know. And I also played some or other. I was asked to play. And I was thinking, there'll be a fight. Like a physical fight between devotees. And then there were devotees from the audience rooting for their teams and being offensive towards the other team. But to my surprise, devotees were not confused. We were confused enough to play soccer, but despite all of the political tension, devotees were not confused about that temporary situation. Whereas we have seen, I'm not going to quote, but when there were some other wars taking place, devotees took sides and were quite confused about the matter. So Arjuna here is also quite confused. And Krishna is bringing him back to the beginning. Okay, let's start from the beginning. You know, first, there's stuff that's temporary. And no matter how important you think it may be, it is only temporary. And so in the grand scheme of things, it has no importance. This is how once when I got a traffic ticket in California, had to go to court to defend my case. And I said, in the grand scheme of things, this ticket means nothing. And the judge, it was some woman, and she was like, she liked it. But she said, but not a good enough of argument for the court. But interestingly, she concluded, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, even this court means nothing. Like, she caught on. How did you translate it? She caught on. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's... Yeah. Skontala, yeah. Da. It is only the illusion that makes someone think that temporary things are valuable. As a matter of fact, we're constantly, especially as aspiring transcendentalists, we're being tested time and time again to see where our values lie. I guess before I go there, I should say that in the grand scheme of things, temporary things have no value. But today I went exercising when I saw you in the park. You know, I exercise twice a week and I walk every day. So what's up with that? That's also trying to maintain a temporary physical body. So there is some value to it, but one has to understand that there is no permanent value in it. There is no absolute value in it. So if there is no world outside of the world of impermanence, we're doomed to a meaningless existence. I mean, every time I think of this, I recall an image of an elementary school in San Diego, California. They had a huge court where the kids would play. And then in gigantic letters, like 3 meters size, written, "You are valuable. You matter. You are loved." And I was thinking, and at the same time you're telling them they're a bunch of chemicals, and everything is, there is no permanence. I mean, where do you get, I mean, how do you back up that statement, "You are valuable"? You're not valuable. You're only hallucinating you're valuable. But like the Bhagavatam says, the fact that that you're hungry suggests the existence of food. So our hunger for meaning suggests existence of value. In other words, the existence of permanence. And that is the statement of the Bhagavad Gita. So this temporary realm and everything that takes place in it, if it has any value, it only has value as it is related to the permanent realm. That's why in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, I swear I read it. "The minute particle of the whole spirit acquires this material body according to his work, and therefore observance of religious principles should be utilized." I mean, Prabhupada didn't directly explain it, but in the context of the whole thing, it becomes very clear. Like, if you don't utilize religion, you're basically cursing yourself to life that has no value, no objective value, only your hallucination of value. And that's it. So in this world, we're constantly being tested. Everyone's being tested, and especially people who are aspiring transcendentalists. We're tested to see where our values lay. What do we consider valuable? And then, like, the typical example is the Mahabharata, the clash of the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Kauravas have lost it. They lost their brains. And it's always the same. It is the promise of the immediate, temporary enjoyment, which we like and need, no doubt. But to sell your soul for it, it's a great term. Don't sell your soul for it. In other words, don't sell the permanent for the impermanent. I think it was Chanakya Pandit who said, don't give up the permanent for the impermanent, because you will lose both. By giving up on the permanent, you have lost it. And by doing so, holding on to the impermanent, you will lose also the impermanent, because that's the nature of it. You cannot hold on to it. So we see how the Kauravas have lost it. And it's always the same. You taste something and then the kama develops. Therefore, kama is said to be the worst enemy of the one who wants to be in knowledge. Because once you develop, what is kama? Kama is an aptitude, is hunger for permanent in, for impermanent enjoyment. It is said that those who are bewildered in such a way don't know that future exists. And greater the sense of enjoyment, the impermanent enjoyment, greater the sense of that enjoyment, lesser of ability to comprehend the existence of future. Think of drug addicts. Their lives are ruined because they cannot think of the future. Just give me my shot now. I just want to enjoy now, and I don't care at what price. Let alone to think in long-term goals, like I'm going to get educated, going to get a job, I'm going to be a contributing member of the society. And what to speak of a very long-term plan, like I'm going to become a self-realized soul. Yeah, right? And so what happened to the Pandavas, they had a bite. The bite. They tasted the kingdom, right? The kingdom had to go to the Pandavas. Pandavas were too young to rule the kingdom, so their uncle took over the kingdom just for some time until they grow up. But then him and his sons, his 100 sons, led by Duryodhana, tasted the kingdom and developed attachment, kama. Jnani no nitya vairina, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, kama is the eternal enemy of one who wants to be in knowledge. I mean, I was reading a lecture Prabhupada gave on this verse. I don't know, but at least 20 times Prabhupada said, people are stupid. People have no brain. People are dull-headed. People are dull-brained. I mean, like very, very juicy terms, you know, one after the other. And that's what it is. Most people are brain-dead. And how are people brain dead? Due to karma. In other words, they trade the permanent for the impermanent. And in this way they lose both, which is quite stupid. But karma has this ability to make a person completely lose themselves in the moment. Like the Chinese opium wars. Do you know this opium wars? First and second Chinese opium wars, you know. Yeah. You see, in English, they say China when they speak of porcelain, because Chinese porcelain was the best in the world. And so they became the concept of porcelain. So in people wouldn't even say porcelain, they would just say China. I don't know, what was the last time you watched an American movie where they said, where did you get your China set? They mean the set of cups and made of porcelain. And so the English merchants would sail to China and buy China. Buy porcelain products and then give people opium, and then people were getting their lives were getting destroyed. So the Chinese government wanted to make a stop to it, like no more of this, because that's what happens: greater the sense of enjoyment, lesser the ability of a person to think, lesser the ability of the person to think in terms of future, lesser the ability of the person to think in long-term future. And the British wouldn't allow it. And that there was a war, and the conquered China twice. They had to open their borders for trade with crazy British merchants who continued to sell opium. Anyhow, that's just, again, just karma. There's no question what is right. It's just what I want. I want a puppy. A puppy is so cute. Does puppy want to be had by you? Like, who the hell are you? And the way people, attitude people have towards animals. Like if it's cute to me, then it's a horrible thing to kill it. And if it's not cute enough and it's tasty enough, then you can literally have a slaughterhouse dedicated only to slaughtering thousands of such creatures every day. I mean, this is totally schizophrenic. But it's going on. Like someone killed a puppy and huge protests and the whole internet's going up in arms against the person. But yet every day that person eats chicken, beef, ducks, everything that's not for you to enjoy as a pet, yeah. So that's what karma does. And in this way, we're constantly tested. This is, those who don't pass this test have no access to transcendence. Yam hi yan vyatayantiete purusha purusha shaba sama dukha sukham diram so amritatvaya kalpate. Prabhupada, in the purport to this verse of the Bhagavad Gita, says this is a definition of what? Of qualification for transcendence. And what's the qualification for transcendence? That one is not bewildered by the temporary pleasures or temporary pains. That's a preliminary qualification for transcendence. In the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada quotes, and I'm not sure where this verse is from, though I memorized it. Tyaja durjana sansargam bhaja sadhu samagamam kuru punya horatram smara nityam anityatam. Very interesting advice. Three, and then the fourth one. I just for the sake of time, I will just translate the last one. Smara nityam anityatam. Smara means what? To remember. Yeah, remembrance. To remember. Smara nityam. Always, eternally. Always remember. Anityatam.
Which is not eternal.
Do this as a practice. Always remember the non-permanent, the quality of impermanence. And if you were to think like this, I mean, you would lose interest in nearly everything. Try. Prahlad Maharaj, tat sadhu manye sura varya dehinam sada samudvigna dhiyam asat grahat. The Prabhupada quoted this verse quite a few times. This is Sri Prahlad addressing his own father. Sura varya, oh you, the best of the demons. Tat sadhu manye, I think the best thing is And then he tells him, you know, best things he learned in the school. Sada samudvigna diyam asad grahat. Samudvigna means totally disturbed. Totally disturbed. Sada. Always. What is always totally disturbed? Diyam. Diyam means intelligence. Why is intelligence always and totally disturbed? Because asat grahat, you know what graha means? Planet. Correct. Why are planets called grahas? Because they grab, because they hold. Grahat means to hold. Because they're grabbing onto asat. I mean, what a statement. That your intelligence is always completely disturbed because you're trying to hold on to the impermanent. And I was thinking, my God, that's the history of my life. And probably everybody else's. A body, I mean, this body, especially after a certain age, is just... You gotta keep up with it, you know. It just wants to disintegrate, and you keep patching, patch here, patch there, patch all over again. And then in one point, you just can't keep up with it. And it does what's supposed to do, fall apart. And it's very disturbing as long as you're trying to hold on to the impermanence. I remember when I was in elementary school, and the teacher showed us a movie, documentary, something about animals, and he showed how a lion devoured a monkey. And I remember the teacher saying, "Oh, lion is eating a monkey," like acute. Like, what the hell? So, I could see the agony in the monkey's eyes. It's just trying to defend, you know, beating the monkey with its hands, where the lion's just devouring it alive. And then in one point, monkey just gave up. And you could see just gave up. And we also have to give up. I mean, this is also stated in the Bhagavatam that you attain the peace when you accept your destiny. Anyhow, but the statement here is, it's a very graphic one. The disturbance comes as long as you're trying to hold on, grab on to the impermanent. Okay, I'll skip that. And who's adhira? Who's adhira, undisturbed? That's also stated a few verses before. That's a person who's not confused by the workings of the impermanence. And the solution to this is matra sparsha stukante. Also, a few verses before this, matra sparsha stukante, shita ushna sukha dukha da, agama apaina anityaha tam stitiksha. Sva Bharata. Titiksha or titiksha? Titiksha. Titiksha. Short. That this pleasure and pain, it's like summer and winter, just comes and goes. And the advice is to tolerate it. One and the other thing. But tolerate it for what? Tolerate it for a higher cause. So that higher cause is necessary. When we say higher, it means permanent. That's a different category to this. What did I write here? Oh, yeah, yeah, interesting. This verse reverses Arjuna's argument, which was that by not fighting, he will save his family members. Right? That was Arjuna's thing. I will not fight because I will save the family members. I will save all of these people. But Krishna's telling him, no, you can't save anyone. Now or later, but everyone meets the same destiny. And that the real person is the soul within the body, and that soul is indestructible, but in ignorance. And the best thing you can do is actually cure that ignorance, which is what Srila Prabhupada, and I'll end there, which is what Srila Prabhupada said in a lecture that he gave on this verse. Basically, the logic Prabhupada presented is that the soul is indestructible. The soul is of interest, yet the soul cannot be measured, cannot be perceived by the blunt material senses. Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Navayat Gram Indra. Prabhupada used to quote this a lot. But you can perceive it by how? By Sevon Mukhe Jiva Daus Fayameva Spurati, burst forward. You can come to see by engaging these senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. And how does that process work? Well, it begins with Shravanam and Kirtanam. And then Prabhupada quotes Cheto Darpanam Arjanam Bhava Maha Dava Agni Nirvapanam, and so on. That this purification of the heart takes place, yes, by engaging your senses in the service of the Lord, and very specifically jiva, because in the verse here says sevan mukhe hi jiva adau, begins with the first tongue to engage is the tongue, the first sense to engage is the tongue, jiva adau, and then other senses. Then Prabhupada says tuchen Hare Krishna Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, that the heart is purified by engaging the tongue in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And then Prabhupada says, but in this age, people are so dull. He said that so many times. Then he quoted this, Prayana Alpa Ayusha Sabya. Kalavasmin Yuge Janaha Manda Sumanda Matayo. Manda bhagya hi upadrutaha. That people are bad, they're stupid, their luck is bad, their knowledge is bad, those who instruct them are stupid. This is what Prabhupada quoted. This is the age of Kali. In other words, Prabhupada saying, here you have this simple process, a solution offered to you for the problem of impermanence, but people are just dull-headed. As Prabhupada repeated it so many times, quoted this verse, and then he also quoted Krite Yat Dhyato Vishnum Tretayam Yajatomaka Dvapare Paricharyayam Kalautad Hari Kirtanat. That in this age of Kali, the recommended process in the Vedic tradition is Hari Kirtana. But people are not interested. People are not interested. They have lost all brain. Quoting Prabhupada in that lecture. And then after the lecture, someone asked to Srila Prabhupada, and I'll end there. God is everywhere and in everyone. Then can we just serve anyone? And Prabhupada's answer is, what does it mean to serve someone? To save the shirt and pants of the drowning man? In other words, the person who asked the question didn't understand the very verse that's been discussed for half an hour. You want to serve people by doing what? And you're seeing God in everyone, and what are you doing? You're reducing your seva down to this level of impermanence. Means you're also dull-headed. Okay. Om Tat Sat. Any questions or comments? Okay, looks like we're good. We have one. Yes. Last second. How to protect oneself from karma. I saw a great bumper sticker in the States said, "Don't follow me, I'm lost." So, it's interesting when people see anyone who even seems not to be confused, they become followers. That's the very point of that movie. What was his name? He ran everywhere. Forrest Gump. Which is a play on words. Dumb. Gump. It's like Forrest Dumb. Okay, it was dumb. But one day he just felt like running and he ran. And he ran. Ran for months. People started to follow him. Yeah, what to do about karma? It seems like, ultimate solution is prema, or divine love. And I specifically say prema, not love, because when you say love for those who are under the influence of karma, that just means everything but love. But love by its own very nature is decentralizing, where karma is put, karma turns you into an egomaniac. Because why is something important? Because you're important. It is your experience. It's not, when someone experiences love, one is for the first time maybe decentralized. Selfless, because that's the nature of love. And divine love is love of God with all of the constituents of God, which means everything. So that is the most wholesome concept of love you can ever think of, even philosophically. That is the solution. But whoever has tried this, we know that it's a journey, and it's quite a journey. And we're told so many different things, like in the Bhagavad Gita, it's stated where the places that lust resides. Then you try to monitor and keep those places under control. Then you're told don't eat too much, live simply, don't. All of these things are meant to help, but really they're all just a crutch. Because karma is what happens to love gone bad. It's like milk that's been contaminated by a sour culture and has turned into yogurt. So the only solution is to love again. And that is the mission, that the whole project of life is exactly that. Uh, And in retrospect, every time I was in a trouble, and every time I needed shelter, every time I needed an advice, the people that I was most ready to go to for shelter, for advice, for kindness, were the kind devotees, not the knowledgeable ones necessarily. Those with great amounts of love. I noticed that, but don't follow me, I'm lost. But I've noticed that also in other people too. Like, who are the most attractive people? To those who love the most. More purely someone loves, more attractive that person is truly, I'd say. But seems like it may take lifetimes for divine love to be developed. And in the meanwhile, if you could at least be civilized, that'd be pretty good too. Are you satisfied for now with this answer? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the lecture. I was thinking that we can get stuck in this imprisonment of temporary also through another trap of suffering being imposed on us. So you were mentioning enjoyment, but there might be also quite often the devotees is to suffering that doesn't seem so temporary, and it demands immediate action in a sense that it seems intolerable in the long run, and usually brings quite some amount of tamas, steals intelligence. So the same similar symptoms as with enjoying, but in an even more acute and severe form when you suffer. But suffering should be, according to our philosophy, also an impetus for purifying the intelligence. But sometimes...
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
So yeah. What to do in cases when there is a possibility of chronic suffering, yeah, and a person doesn't see the way out, and yeah, there is no Krishna in that moment, so how to deal with
Yeah, you've noticed that well. You noticed that well. And I thought of it as I was speaking, and even I quoted the verse, Matra Sparsha Sugashi. You need to tolerate the pain and the pleasure. In other words, you need to rise above it. And how you're going to rise above it depends. I was a soldier. I was in combat. I mean, I've seen people do sick things to people. And when there were no people around, they would do it to animals. And those are such experiences that that some of my colleagues lost it, because those are very painful experiences. They're too intense, and and what it did to them, it bound them to that specific time in history. They just couldn't function. You know, when the war ended, they couldn't function in the now. They couldn't think of the future. You know, they were jailed in past, and in a very tamasic way. So I've seen that. Just as extreme pleasure arrests consciousness, so does extreme pain. And so I think just as your advice to remove yourself from extreme pleasure, you also would be well advised to remove yourself from extreme pain. Now, how are you going to do that? You know, I would leave that to the people of the profession. But, you know, some people need psychiatric treatment. In extreme cases, we're talking extreme cases like that. As Bruce Lee said, you should be like water, my friend. You should flow. But when the flow of water is arrested, it rots. Collects all kinds of bacteria and like that. We're very fluid beings. You know, and when you get arrested like that in one place, you rot. Now, how to help that person? I guess it goes from case to case. But in extreme cases, yeah. PTSD, right? does that, would anyone else like to contribute to this question?
I think we should beg for the mercy.
Oh, definitely, yeah, but in extreme cases, the person is just cognitively shut. I mean, I don't know if you've seen an extreme case. You can't reason with the person. You can't even be nice. It just doesn't help. You know, when it's a mild case, you can beg. You can tell the person beg for mercy. And you can be kind. And I don't know. You can do things, but in extreme cases, it happened to my buddies, my soldier buddies. You don't know what to do. Nothing helps. And even when it seems to help, they just, you know, 10 minutes later just revert to it. Like that.
Maybe I can ask a microphone. For like the lines of the said, beg for mercy. Maybe can you envision that?
Shri Panchatattvati.
I mean, these cases of severe suffering definitely make you humble. That, I mean, I don't, not necessarily again, but how to help a person to at least make something with it, out of it, to advance in a quality of humility, because in some situation you are like a tree, you are forced to hurt everything, and your standards of enjoyment are going to the ground and everything. Mm-hmm. So maybe, I mean, definitely this is some kind of justification for that kind of suffering, that it's purifying. And so, but sometimes it's not purifying.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada speaks of that, says that imagine two different people having the same nasty experience, and one concludes everything is temporary, let's surrender to God. And the other one concludes there is no God. Experience the very same thing. One leans towards religion for a solution and the other one exactly the opposite. And Prabhupada raises the question, why is that so? And he says, because of punya. Like that. So it's not necessarily that an experience purifies as much as our interpretation of the experience. Oh yeah, pain is humiliating. I was a temple president for many years, and one of our devotees, Amataji, a mother of three, she ended up in the hospital because her bowels wouldn't work. Like, she couldn't digest anything. She was in huge pain. And she ended up in the hospital for weeks and weeks and months. I don't know, it was a very long time. And even though I was a brahmacharya at the time, I took, you know, a couple of devotees with me, and we went to visit her, you know, just like, you know, show some friendship, you know, to hell with these divisions now. And I, you know, we brought a gift, and she didn't want to see us because she felt too embarrassed, like, physically she was just such a mess, you know, and she felt, oh, don't look at me. Yeah. And then anyhow, when she got better, we came again, and then she was okay. But in that state, when she was just like really looking really bad, it's humiliating. Now, whether humiliation results in humility, that's a good question. I mean, it would be a good, you know, it's an easy solution, you know. Humility, humiliation results, you solve humiliation with humility. That's what Nietzsche said that Christians did. They were humiliated, and then they out of humiliation made a religion. Anyhow, that's a different argument, but yeah, that's why, I mean, Prabhupada gave us a very important mission, you know. It's a mission to educate people and to make religion popular. Not popular in the sense that we present something which religion is not, but, you know, make people understand religion, and so understand that people like it, that everyone likes it, it becomes popular. Then when people find themselves in such situations, they'll be more likely to to have a good result, conscious-wise. No. Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.